This is Spectator Radio, the Spectator's curated podcast collection.
Welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily podcast. Theresa May is back for the new parliamentary session and her MPs are plotting how much longer she should be there for. I'm Fraser Nelson and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls to discuss. So Katie, we've got various plots as to whether it's possible to get rid of Theresa May. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
So the big one today is that the executive of the 1922 Committee of Conservative Backbenchers are meeting. And what is up for discussion is whether they want to try and change the rules so that they can mount a leadership challenge or a confidence vote against Theresa May.
So that's 18 Tory MPs, a group of them are meeting to discuss basically whether you can change. Right now, you're not allowed to challenge her again for 12 months, but those rules could be changed by just 18 MPs.
Yeah, currently she is safe until December, but they could try and change the rules so you can have a confidence vote much sooner, should enough MPs want one. And this could then be put to, I think a rule change could then be put to a vote amongst Tory MPs rather than just the committee if they wanted to have a bit of cover for that.
All right. And James, if they were to upend this, it'd be quite a big deal. Could they do this without wider permission from the party? And do you think Theresa May would resign if they got permission to change the rules, because there'd be no prizes for guessing what would then follow?
So the 1922 committee controls the rules of a Conservative parliamentary party. They can't change the rules of the leadership contest that would follow, but they can themselves change the rules about the no confidence vote. Technically, the executive could just choose to change those rules themselves. I think it is highly unlikely that they would do that, given the magnitude of the change. I suspect they would go and ask the whole Conservative parliamentary party, from the Prime Minister downwards, whether they wanted to make this change, but in a secret ballot, crucially. And I think one of the other reasons they would do that is that that result would essentially be a proxy, because there's only one reason why you want to change the rules. And the idea is that would provide some dignity, some cover for whatever transition or turnover was needed.
Now, Katie, I imagine that the question isn't whether they want to get rid of Theresa May. Pretty much all of them do. The question is timing, because a leadership election, if held now, would likely result in a victory for a certain MP who used to edit this magazine. Most of the other contenders haven't really had time to get their campaigns going. We can see them trying to do this. The people like Matt Hancock, Sajid Javid, Jeremy Hunt, they will all be playing for time. But there's one person who doesn't need to be playing for time as much because of recent developments.
Yes, all the signs so far suggest that Boris Johnson is doing very well out of the Brexit Party when it comes to who should succeed Theresa May. And we had a Conservative Home poll at the weekend, which made the point that he is now the favourite amongst Tory members by quite a considerable margin. And actually, other rivals have fallen behind, and he's moved in front by quite a sizable lead.
What about Dominic Raab? He's the other Brexiteer.
Dominic Raab has drained support slightly, not by a substantial margin, but I think compared to where Boris is, it does give the impression that rather than just looking for a Brexiteer, lots of people think that they might need Boris Johnson's style, if you could call it that, combined with his Brexiteer credentials to turn things around. And I think that is in part because when you look at the polls in general, the Tories are now falling back consistently behind Labour, and there is a sense that they do need something drastic in order to turn things around. And I think that's why Boris has been talked up a lot more. But I also think that, as happens every time Boris Johnson surges in popularity slightly, the Stop Boris campaign starts up again. So you have Arse, which is the name, forgive my language, is the name of the Scottish Conservative MP plot to try and stop Boris Johnson from becoming leader.
Arse?
Arse. Arse, yeah. I'm not going to dwell on it for too long. I'm not even sure if it's an acronym.
What does R stand for?
I'm not even sure if it's an acronym.
James, is it an acronym? I think Boris Johnson isn't arse, probably. But
I don't know. I'm just reveling in this Scottish pronunciation contest between the two of you. That's how best to say it.
I never claim.
Yes. Anyway,
so
they probably just made up for four random words to come up with the word S, which is what. So you've got the Ruth Davidson anti. What would it be? Let's do a competition for our podcast listeners. What four words do you reckon spell Erse?
So you have Scottish Conservative MPs who are adamant, and you probably leave Ross Thompson out of this, who is a Brexiteer Scottish Conservative MP, but the bulk are adamant they don't want Boris Johnson to be Prime Minister because they think he is toxic, nor for the border. And if you have Boris Johnson as Prime Minister, that is very bad for their own electoral prospects. Now, so there's an effort there. You also have lots of MPs. I mean, Nick Bowles probably not so much now, given that he said he isn't going to stand again as independent, but there are other Conservative MPs who feel that if Boris Johnson were leader, they wouldn't really have a place there. So you're already hearing about how they might try and stop him where you'd have a leadership round. I still think, though, that ultimately most of the leadership candidates, other than Boris Johnson and Dominic Raab, don't think that a leadership contest in the next couple of months would be good for them. And for that reason, even if you get to this point of voting on a rule change, there is a chance that not everyone goes for it, because I think people are actually more worried about Boris, just as some people come round to him, because it begins to look as though that person really does potentially have a chance.
Now, James, the Stop Boris faction has depended on its support the fact that Boris irritates the hell out of the majority of backbench Tory MPs. Now, I can partly see that. I mean, sometimes he irritates the hell out of me. I think that when he was doing my job, he only came in a couple of times a week and still managed to produce a brilliant magazine. It infuriates people who have to work very hard to achieve what Boris seems to do over a lazy weekend. But might it come down to a separate question, not whether you as an MP are infuriated by Boris, whether you think he is the man most likely to keep your job as an MP? So are we seeing signs of Tory MPs thinking, okay, I might hate Boris Johnson's vibe, I might hate the way he doesn't care about anybody, I might think he's a narcissist, however, I am a dead man unless we get a proper leader. Yeah. And Boris can stop Farage in a way that nobody else can.
In crude terms, the worse things are for the Tories, the better things are for Boris Johnson. In terms of, because the case for him is this: if you end up in a situation where the Conservative Party is at 25% and the Brexit Party is at 15%, who is the best person to knock that 15% down to a more manageable number? But Boris Johnson goes the argument, you know, and that there is this. I think it's very telling today that the Daily Telegraph calls for a populist leader of the Conservative Party. Essentially, the argument goes: you've got Corbyn on the one hand, offering kind of left-wing populism. You've got Farage offering Brexiteer populism. So the Tories need their own kind of centre-right populist. And the argument goes that that is the case for Boris Johnson. And this is a case that lots of people have thought about at various points. I remember after the election went wrong in 2017, there were lots of people who thought, you know, senior people in the cabinet who thought, well, maybe it is Boris. Now, look, the problem for Boris is this, is I don't think you could say he was a resounding success as Foreign Secretary. And I think there are, you know, as we've been discussing, there are obstacles within the parliamentary party. But the case for him is this, is if you look down at the list of the most vulnerable Tory seats and at the same time the most vulnerable Labour seats, they are overwhelmingly Leave seats. And if you were going to pick someone to put on a bus and send to stand in that town square and try and save and try and take those seats or save those seats for the Tories, Boris is your most obvious candidate. And, you know, you can already hear his allies making this case all around the parliamentary party, which is, yes, Boris has voted with the ERG, but he's not the same as the ERG. Look at the fact that, you know, he thinks that these Extinction Rebellion protesters have a case. Look at the fact that he doesn't want a kind of night watchman state. Instead, he thinks that, you know, we should use the state to do big infrastructure projects and build more houses, you know, bridges across the channel and all that kind of stuff. So you can already hear his allies beginning to make this case of how he could fuse together different Tory traditions to create an electoral pitch, and that he wouldn't try and fight the election as a mandate for no deal Brexit, but he'd try and fight the election on a kind of classic Tory picture of which Brexit would just be a part. You know, if you look back at this article he wrote in Telegraph, I think 2 Mondays ago, which is his attempt to kind of position himself very much as a One Nation Conservative, talking about the government's success in increasing breast cancer survival rates, for example, and things like that, and trying to make this argument against Corbynism, that you need to marry together a dynamic private sector to fund the public services that the country wants. And there is this feeling that people, parties always overcorrect when they pick the next leader. And what can Theresa May not do more than anything else? It's communicate. What can Boris Johnson do better than anybody else in on the centre-right at the moment? It is communicate. And that is why, despite the massive reservations that the bulk of the Conservative Parliamentary Party have about him, you can't rule him out at this moment.
Now, Katie, James makes a very persuasive case for Boris Johnson there. But then again, one nation was appropriate in the pre-Brexit days. If there are two nations now, it is Leave versus Remain. So, sure, he might do well in Bishop Auckland and other Leave-targeting seats, but he would not do well in Battersea. He might not do well in our native Scotland. He might not do well in inner cities. So is the Tory risking that in trying to answer the Brexit question, they create a new divide that leaves behind Remain voters to whom Boris Johnson is pretty much the political antichrist?
Potentially. It depends on whether you think that the party has really lost a lot of those voters to the point that it's going to be hard to get them back. Because I think there is a debate if you speak to potential leadership candidates, but also the people trying to pick who they should get behind over what the Tory demographic now is. Do you still think that, say, as in 2015, you can have the kind of Cameroon coalition of voters, which I think had metropolitan types, Remain voters? Or do you accept, as some figures in Cabinet argue, that the voter has changed now and the average voter is actually much more likely to live outside of the city, to be in rural areas, to have voted Leave and to be working class? And I think that's the debate. Lots of people will say you can do Battersea and Bishop Auckland, but I do think there's an increasing number who say, well, if you have to prioritise, you're better going after Bishop Auckland, because Battersea is going to be very uphill. You might lose Bishop Auckland voters along the way, and Battersea might still then say, well, we still don't forgive you for the Leave vote. So I think that's the potential problem.
This is the Tory party's short-term, medium-term dilemma, which is you can say, if you were putting someone to send to Bishop Auckland, right, to campaign tomorrow morning from the Tory party, you would probably pick Boris, right? But this is the challenge. Bishop Auckland has never voted for a Conservative MP. And the question, there's a kind of legitimate question about how, in any kind of long-term frame, how much appetite is there for centre-right economics in Bishop Auckland? Boris Johnson might give you a short-term boost, but he stores up, as Katie says, long-term problems. I mean, remember, even in 2017, a third of the Tory vote were Remainers. And again, I think one of the things that is skewing this argument is Jeremy Corbyn, which is, I think if Labour were led by a middle-of-the-road figure, I think a lot of Tories would probably think, we take the hit, we take the period in opposition, we lick our wounds, we come up with some, you know, new governing strategy, some new electoral strategy, and that's what we're going to do. But I think Jeremy Corbyn is such an extreme figure threat, whatever phrase you want to use, but I think there are more Tories prepared to roll the dice to stop Corbyn than there would be normally. I mean, if you think back to in 97, lots of Tories, I mean, they were wrong because they were out for three terms. Lots of Tories thought that, you know, a few years of Blair would be fine. The Tory party would sort itself out. It took a lot longer than they thought to sort itself out, which is another reminder of the dangers of these things. But one term of Corbyn government would change the face of this country for generations. You know, you would not reverse this in one term of Tory government. You would be looking at four or five terms of Conservative government to reverse the changes that Jeremy Corbyn would bring in one term.
But Katie, I guess the question is whether Tory MPs will be thinking, as per the Telegraph's leading article this morning, it's time to send in the populists, or rather accept that this is the age of the populists. I guess don't bother, they're here.
Well, I think when you look at what an election would look like if Jeremy Corbyn leads Labour, there is an increasing view that they need to have the opposite version of Jeremy Corbyn, but with some of Jeremy Corbyn's qualities. So if you look at the fact that that is a very unique politician, you can clearly identify them. I don't know if you would call Jeremy Corbyn eccentric in some respects, but I think that is why lots of people are looking at figures like Boris Johnson. And I was speaking to someone who, over the weekend, went to a few constituency dinners, and they said it was a really good reminder of the fact that outside London, most people don't know who Jeremy Hunt and Sajid Javid are.
True, yeah.
And actually, when you were talking about leadership candidates in the association, those names just didn't come up. And the only names that really came up were Brexiteers and people like Boris Johnson and Jacob Rees-Mogg. Rob was mentioned, and I think that going home in the recess has made people wonder if taking a risk on someone who isn't very well known, perhaps is middle of the road, and in the long term might get them to a point of winning back voters in Battersea, is really such a good strategy when in the immediate facing situation they could be out of power.
And James, I don't know if you spend much time in Tory associations, but I have been to quite a few. And I'm always struck at these events when they have an open discussion. The last half of it is member after member asking, why the hell isn't Boris Johnson our leader? I mean, it seems to all come back to Boris. We need Boris. Why are you MPs so jealous of him? Can't you see that the universe bends towards him? That might infuriate you, but that's what we need right now.
I think this varies association by association. Undoubtedly, it's the kind of Conholme polling, which has proven to be kind of fairly accurate in the past. You know, he is currently the member's choice. But I think there is also a bit of the membership that don't want him as well. Mm. You know, he arouses the strongest emotions on either side of this debate. And I think in a way, his strength is that, you know, obviously what the Tory party needs right now is someone who can act as a bridge between Battersea and British Auckland, which, if it hadn't taken on this kind of almost this shaman-like sense for Remain voters, you could argue that Boris Johnson was that, because he was the mayor of London who campaigned to leave. You know, you could have seen him as that bridge, but he obviously, you know, that bridge has been burnt, I think it is fair to say. And I think, you know,
the Battersea is lost to Boris forever.
Yeah, I think Boris doesn't think that, but I think that, you know, if you look at the polling, it's hard to imagine that Justine Greening, who used to share an office with Boris Johnson, would be opening the champagne and thinking she's going to hold her Putney seat if Boris Johnson becomes leader. I mean, that is... So how do you navigate this dilemma? Is there a Tory party leadership candidate at the moment who doesn't basically say the party has to give up some seats here to try and win seats there? And that is this great dilemma, because if you look at that... You know, I was talking earlier about looking at the most marginal seats. You know, but even if you're clean sweeping those, essentially, you're still looking at a very fragile governing majority. Because, you know, if you choose to essentially concentrate on that route, it's very hard to build a 40, 60 seat majority. You're always looking at just getting over the line.
James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes store. And also, if you can work out how, do please rate and review us. I now, sad to admit, spend every Monday and Tuesday reading these reviews, and they're great. I love to hear what you guys think we do right, what we do wrong, what we could do more or less of. So please do keep them coming. It's always great to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Gabriel Radonich, who produced the podcast.